Welcome to the Glastonbury Goddess Conference podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Hale. The Glastonbury Goddess Conference has been offered every year since 1996, celebrating and honouring a different aspect of goddess each year. In this podcast, I will speak to presenters, musicians, ceremonialists, priestesses, and other people involved in this magical event. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Goddess Conference podcast. It's been a while since our last episode, and today it is my great pleasure to have as my guest Anne Bridget Waters, who is a priestess of Isis and Bridget, and she has been a community activist for 50 years. And she's an author, and she has led sacred pilgrimages and so much more. So welcome, Anne.
Hi. Hello, Ellen. Glad to see you.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you here. And as always, I like my guests to introduce themselves because, of course, there's so much more than the few words that I read. So can you introduce yourself and tell us what it is you do in the world?
Thank you. Well, I have a long story. I'm 73 now, so there's a lot of life experience I could introduce and share. I came to the goddess through pantheism when I was filling out in about 1967, 68, filling out a job application, and they said religion. And I'm like, gosh, you know, this is a terrible question to ask me. And I was a teenager, and I wrote pantheism because I'd been studying mythology. And then that kind of stuck with me for a long time. And through a Native American path, which a lot of us in the States here were opened up to rituals and sweat lodges and things in the 70s. And then moon rituals and moon circles. It was just really magical. The advent of crystals in my life. And my life just evolved through all of these things. The goddess word started showing up, and the idea of the divine feminine as a distinct direction and a sense of community. And so from that time forward, that began to enfold itself into my activism, which was a separate part of my world, the politics. And in the late 60s and early 70s, I was very involved in the street actions against the Vietnam War and was an activist, a peace activist, and have been all my adult life, as well as being a feminist and involved in civil rights. And so I'm from that generation. And for a long time, my activism and my spirituality were extremely separate parts of my life. So my talk here for the Goddess Conference was on sacred activism. So the word sacred just was pretty much not allowed. And even now, it's difficult to use that word in the context of science-based discussions about food and farming and climate change. We need to use that word because it connects us with our heart, because what we love, we save. And to bring love and the feeling that all the waters are sacred, the air is sacred, the sun coming down to us and the rain falling from the sky, such a miracle. And to have that sacredness, which I know this audience understands, but to bring it to our work in the world and share it with the wider audience beyond our goddess culture. So luckily today, Ellen and I are speaking very frankly with a group of people that totally understand this. But when I wrote my book for the Grange, which is a fraternal order, patrons of husbandry, the name of the book was The Spirit of the Grange and The Wisdom of Demeter. But I avoided the word sacred in the book. I was advised by several people just to leave it out so that my message could go out to this Middle America audience. So I did, but I regret that now. And at the time, it was a difficult decision, but I really want to encourage us, we don't need the word sacred necessarily, but to understand, to bring the sacred into our community activism and to bring our goddess community out into the general community. Because I know a number of women that spoke of this same thing at the conference, and we are on this trajectory now to be more open about who we are, what we do, sharing that. So who I am is someone who wants to share, bring those two things, marry those two parts of my life, the divine sacred activism into the activism that was so political and science-based.
Wow. I always get shivers when you talk now. It was just the beauty of understanding the sacredness of what we're trying to do with the activism. Well, I'm not saying that I'm an activist like that, but just I think for me, hearing it like that, it just takes it to an even deeper level. Like you say, the waters are sacred, the air is sacred. And I think, like you say, if people could hear that, if people outside our community could hear it like that and understand the sacredness, it could open up people to understanding it at a new level.
Yes, I so hope so. I was in Ireland before I came to the conference, and we went to the Boyne and stood on the banks of the Boyne River. We also went to the source of the Boyne and made prayers there at the Trinity Well area of that stream, that small stream. And then we went to the large Boyne and stood on the banks of that river and also declared ourselves as caretakers of the sacred waters of the earth. And there are people right now who are working with activism, trying to stop them from dumping more industrial and animal waste into the waters. And the people who are doing that, the people who feel compulsed by economics to dump the stuff in, to extract their waste into the beautiful, clear waters of the sacred Boyne, they don't see the river as sacred. It's a resource, and the word resource is a problem, is really a problem for all of us. And the climate change issues come from a separation of our spirituality to our daily life. And as you and I both know, we weave those things together. We are weavers, and that tapestry of our life with all the beautiful threads of the weaving contains all these things. And what are the colors? What is this? What is the pattern we are weaving? And so for us to learn to speak to people with the most difficulty of the people who we don't agree with, and helping them to find that open heart place where if they saw the river as sacred, how could they dump that trash there? You know, it just changes things. And there's so much of this going on a big level on the planet. Well, let's work on a little community level with the people that we live with and our neighbors, and we can have easier conversations. So my community activism is very front and center in my life. And I have produced plays. I'm a script writer, and I produce pageants and what I call ritual theater plays that are of interest to the general community because of theatrical elements. And so that is one way people can interface with the community. For more than 30 years now, we have done a winter solstice festival, and it's indoors because of the weather here in California. Could be just pouring rain, we hope. And yeah, and so we light candles, we sing songs into the darkness, into the candlelit space. We share storytelling that appeals to children, something of a play or a pageant presents itself. And we do a spiral dance, a beautiful, enthusiastic, community relating spiral dance, sing each other as we pass through the dance at the end. And it's just been wonderful. We've had as many as 200 people there. And there are people of all faiths. A lot of people don't relate to Christmas, so they want to come as the sacred celebration of the season. And so we just, it's just very friendly. It's what I call pagan light. I don't really cast a circle, you know, in the way I might in a very formal setting, but we make sure, I make sure for myself that the ritual energies are set in place, and we do create sacred space and have the sense of the sacred running as a thread through what happens that evening as a community celebration. So there's just so many things I'm encouraging. People probably are already doing these things, but to realize that is community sacred activism, those things that we do as priestesses, as the goddess community.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that, how you, because normally, you know, if I was to organize a winter solstice circle or whatever, a ceremony or a celebration, I would think, oh, it's only going to be, you know, goddess loving people who are going to come, and everyone else is going to think it's weird. But the way that you describe it and the way that you do it, it just sounds well, so inviting. And I think maybe people are, like you say, they might not celebrate Christmas, or they might just be as well, something within them speaks, like their heart is curious, and they go, oh, what's that? And then to come together like that with all different faiths and meet like that, and then open up to maybe, I don't know what that leads to, you know, discussions and actions and just sharing. And it just sounds really beautiful. I love that.
Well, yeah, thanks. I do think it's a successful and easy to do, easy to produce event. As we all know, event production can be, starts out as a good idea and can be very, very time consuming and difficult, but it's very simple. And we do add little elements of real activism in. One year, the altars, when I was building the altars, I put elements of renewable energy onto every one of them. So I actually built a tiny little windmill, and we had on the air altar, and we had solar panels, tiny little solar panels running a tiny machine on the fire altar, and so on. And of course, water is easy because beautiful little fountain. And then not like big lessons, like big science lessons, but just little brain sparks. And hopefully people took that home in a place in their heart as well as in the science part of their brain to share and think about later. So that happened mostly. There's not a real science-based opportunity, but we draw prayer flags that are put on cloth and then are hung somewhere in the community for everyone to see. It's a really great opportunity to work with children and make something of that lasts, you know. Drawing with colored pens on old sheet, you know, torn up sheets basically. And so as much as I appreciate big production values, I also appreciate how things could be very simple and done with no budget and create an impact in communities. So those are just a few things that we do here that are actually quite goddess-based. Am I talking too much? Do you want to ask another question?
No, I'm just going, oh my God, there's so many ideas. And I just, like you said, I also love the simplicity. You know, you don't have to make a big production. I always think it's always better if it's simpler, you know, not, doesn't have to be a big performance.
Right. And even the theater, when I write a theater piece, I try to use kind of the Greek chorus idea, where there's not a lot of memorization by actors. And so we can just use our bodies. We can embody things and while someone tells a story. So that's something also that helps everyone simplify the opportunity to do theater in the community. Here's a completely different thing of getting off the theater track. Recently, in the past few years, we have done seed saving and seed sharing events. And so Vandana Shiva is one of my great mentors. She is an Indian woman who is really the most outspoken person in the world about the importance of seed. And she says, whoever controls the food supply controls the world. And she's really teaching seed. Seed. It's like that seed word keeps coming up. And so we save seeds from our garden. Right now I have a lot of herbs coming into seed. And so my job is to harvest them and dry them. And then in March, we'll begin to do these sharing events where we come together with our seeds and we share them out to the community. So my clary sage goes to hundreds of people, theoretically, could. We get up to 200 people that come. During COVID, we did it outside. We continued to put these events out, and we had tables, and people came by and with little envelopes and bags and labeling things. And it was a great conversation among the gardeners and also among people who are interested in becoming gardeners. And a couple of serious farmers came with some beautiful corn seed. And there are now two seed banks in our area who are banking the seed and doing very professional work of archiving the seed, keeping it in a good, correct humidity, and growing it out. The seeds have to be grown out. So it's really good to share your seeds. So the seeds get grown out every year or every few years. And seeds being sacred, occasionally I use the word. And we just ask for the rain to come down in a song, inch by inch, row by row, please help these seeds to grow. It's a beautiful children's song that everyone loves to sing. And we just get together and just, you know, have a sing-along. So there's ways that this simple event, you don't have to serve food because that's a whole nother level of difficulty, but this simple event becomes a fun experience and people from the community pass through and all kinds of people come. It's every walk of life, you know, because some people are growing gardens because they need to have food come with their lives cheaper. And other people are gentlemen farmers, you know, and have just beautiful gardens that they appreciate and enjoy the beauty of that fulfillment. So I really recommend seed saving and sharing. It's my new favorite go-to community activism with a sacred center, and comes truly from the heart, and is going to help us all with these issues of climate change and energy conservation.
I just love hearing that, because I always think in my brain, because I always think make everything like I always think everything is too difficult and it's a problem and I get scared and I shut down. But when you talk about, because for me, like activism, it sounds really big, but I just love hearing you share all these ideas of how, you know, something that can be quite simple and small, like seed sharing, it, you know, just getting together, just singing, and how that of course can make a change first for ourselves and then for our friends and neighbors and, you know, spread out into the world. And I just it's really encouraging and inspirational for me to hear that. So yeah, thank you for sharing all of that. It's amazing.
I really want to encourage everyone that as much as we like annual events and we like long-term big projects, and they do need to happen for the world to continue rolling in its spiral forward, you can do singular one things, just singular one thing. You know, somebody puts a poster together, you put it up, you tell the social media, you get some tables, you throw them out into a parking lot on a nice day, and people want to come. They're excited to show up. For one thing, they're getting something free. That's always great, isn't it?
Yes.
And then there are people who come around the edges as vendors, you know, people selling little garden tools, and it's become an event of its own. I'm trying to keep it really simple, you know, continue to come back to the simplicity of it so that there's not application forms and there's, you know, we're staying within just general county health regulations or whatever. And so that keeps the intimidation factor down, Ellen. Encourage you to, with a couple of friends, you could put this together, you know. And here's a great addition that happened. a little hint for people. The seed companies themselves who package seeds commercially, those are dated and they can't sell them after a certain date. In fact, they begin to get rid of them before the date. So we have contacted a couple of distribution centers, and last year we got like 7 pallets of seeds. Oh, wow. We sent them all around California and up into Oregon, and they were shared out into these community centers I call Granges, and just big bins of seeds ended up just this big freebie for the community. Yeah. And it was just incredible. And they ended up at the food bank as well as into the seed banks and, wow. and into all of our gardens and encouraging us to be growing some of the same things and talking about them. That's pretty interesting too. Mm. How did this variety of squash do for you? You know, we're finding out now as we're going to harvest from those spring seeds that were shared last March, planted in May, and are coming now into fruit. It's like this wonderful cycle. And we get to have a year-long conversation around seed and food. Food being central to almost all, to every eating being, every being.
Yes. Oh, that's wonderful. I love that. I had no idea about, you know, I couldn't imagine that they throw away that many seeds if you, you know, if someone doesn't ask for them like you did. That's amazing. I could talk about this all day, but I also want to take a different turn. And because you have been a practicing priestess of Isis, is it for 50 years? Is that right?
Well, 50 years ago, I called myself Moon Woman, and I was priestess of the moon and very, very much tuning into the moon and her phases and the tides of the sea. And so that was who I was, and I wasn't ordained until many, many years later, but Bridget came into my life as really the first goddess. Way back further. Inanna, the descent of Inanna was a very powerful experience that of my own, you know, dark night of the soul and what a helpmate she was to me, and really that archetype and her strength and courage and her brightness and her fullness of who she was as this goddess of abundance and the queen of heaven, and yet descending into giving every single thing of her raiment and her glory away to take herself down to the bare bones and beyond. So she was my call to the goddess, and that was many decades ago, in the 80s. And out of having read that book someone handed to me, The Descent of Inanna, and reading that those early translations, all kinds of things opened up. So that's where I was at. I have been leading ritual because I was one of the first people in my area who caught on to the opportunities here and starting to do the plays, bringing other people into literally an embodiment experience where we did one thing. We did the stealing of Persephone and the Eleusinian mysteries in a series of caves at a place called Pinnacles Monument, where played the role of Persephone and was way down at the bottom of these caves. And pilgrims came to us in a poorly lit, probably maybe not as safe as it should have been, circumstance, coming from an upper temple of Demeter, you know, and embodying this. But this was with the goddess community. These were people who truly wanted to go to in-depth experiences with the divine feminine as the centerpiece of that. Not so much sacred activism, but much of my life also has been involved in circles of varying sizes, not just the big community rituals, but also ongoing moon circles. And today, in fact, when we finish, I'm going to the river, to the Eel River, and I'm pouring some waters from the chalice well that I brought home with me, and also Bridget's well in Kildare, Ireland, and a few places from my travels in the Nile River, and I will mix those together into the Eel River with a lot of reverence and prayer with a couple of friends, women circle friends, and we will have this small ritual at the river that this our own wild, truly amazing sacred river that feeds our watershed. I believe we are regionally, we are spiritually, we are a community created by watersheds, by drinking this same water and living in these watersheds.
Yeah. Wow, there was so much there. I can't even remember. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't know, if probably similar for you, but it's like where I find my power to do other things is within my spirituality. And, you know, like you talked about those, that ritual in the caves, and I'm thinking, you know, how that can be so empowering. I wanted to ask you as well, like, do you find like you find your inner power? Where do you find your inner power, and how do you like help other people or guide other people to find their inner power?
Well, I maintain a ritual in my home on a daily basis, the noon ritual of Isis. So right at noon, we invoke Isis. We greet the elements, we call and thank the sun for the noonday sun being so powerful, but also the moon and stars for being there. And we bring words out from our heart that what are the three words that will empower me today? So I come back into that inner sacred space to bring forward from myself something. I'm asking for something, you know, to be honest, it's an appeal. You know, when I say courage, it doesn't mean I have it. It means I really want to engage with it, you know. And then we all share these words together and empower each other's words. It's been happening on Zoom for the last few years. But it does happen in person at the Temple of Isis in Geyserville at the Isis Oasis, which is a temple to Isis. It does happen there every day at noon. And we do this ritual as a daily empowerment, a centering, a grounding, a come back from that place at noon and go into the rest of your day. So that helps me, and as many as everyone listening here has an altar, at least one. I mean, Little Altars Everywhere is not only a book, it's actually a lifestyle.
Yes.
Yes, right? So I love having my altars around. As I come out of my bedroom in the morning, I'm greeted by my beautiful winged Isis and that central altar in the hallway of that more inner space of my house. And all around I see things that I have done. And for me, they are sacred touches. For some people, they may be a display of art. I don't need to, you know, boast it out. I see right now just where I'm sitting, there's flowers from my garden with a beautiful bee art and, you know, a few other things sitting over there on that surface. So we call to ourselves what we need and to gain that presence of mind and rediscover in the spiral of life, we do need practices. So a lot of my practices are nature oriented. I was in the giant redwoods 2 days ago. I felt like I was in a cathedral.
Oh wow! I just read a book that had it was called the Edge of the Orchard, and it was I think it was set in like the 1800s or something. And they went to those redwoods, and I was like, oh, I just want to go there so badly. Sounds amazing.
Please come, Ellen. And I just traveled through France, Ireland, and England, and I loved my travels so much. And everywhere I went, there were ancient trees, ancient oaks. I'm especially attracted to oaks, and they seem to be everywhere. And they're each one is such a unique personality, those oaks. And these redwoods are truly astounding beings. They are huge, you know. And you can't help but feel in awe, in a state of awe and wonderment. And that's why I said they were like a cathedral.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I encourage everyone to spend time in nature. I think that we get caught up in our devices and our work world and the myopic presence, the constant presence of the devices and the computers, and as wonderful and beneficial they are, as in allowing you and I to see each other right now, we can balance that. Restore the balance is the name of at least three plays that I've written. Restoring the balance.
Yeah, but that's what we need. So write another.
I know. I keep coming back around to that's what I need too. Balance within, you know, the divine masculine, divine feminine coming together. And I'm really excited that next year's conference is honoring crone in my own cronehood, to claim that word, to reclaim that word, crone. Can it be? Yes, I believe so. Yeah. And so I'm open to any more questions, whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I've got where I live in Stockholm, we got lots of oak trees. So it's beautiful. You know, every time they cut one down, I'm like, I just call the council and I'm, excuse me, are they allowed to cut them down? Really? Oh, they are, because they're building a house. Okay, then. But we've got so many oak trees. They're not like huge, huge, but they're still really big. So that's really lovely, I think.
Yeah, oaks, you know, oaks are one of the community building trees because of the generous nature of the oak with those acorns and even the bowls, the wasps making bowls. There are so many animals who are drawn to the animals who are drawn to the animals who are, you know, it's like the community of animals in the natural world that gather around oaks is stupendous. And of course, we can eat the acorns also. I live in the land of the Pomo people, who were the original people of this land here. And they were acorn eaters. And they are acorn eaters, the ones who are still here. We have, unfortunately, you know, in our white man vision, decimated the population, but they still eat acorns. And I have learned how to process and eat acorns myself. And I have a friend who does it on a regular annual basis. It's not just a little stunt for her. It's really something she loves to have as part of her diet. Eating the wild foods connects us really viscerally in our viscera with nature, and recognizing we are the interconnected web. We are not this steward of nature, you know, as the Christian teachings would have it.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about that, and I've been talking about it this week because I'm back from holidays up in the woods. And, you know, I was picking blueberries and wild strawberries and mushrooms and raspberries just in the woods and, you know, cooking jam. And I was just saying, I'm never as happy and just filled with gratitude as when I'm, you know, just standing there picking those blueberries, and it's just, it's you know, where I feel at home, and it's I just love that. And I'm just like, I can just go out into the woods and pick like liters, a bucket of blueberries. It's just so beautiful and so amazing. I love that.
Yeah, truly, truly, you're blessed when you can do that, Ellen. It's not everyone can or will do it, but those of us who do can bring that, I mean, that essence of the sacredness of the woods into our lives and share that into our activism. You give that jar of blueberry jam to somebody, that's an act of activism.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to eat part of that, in that experience of gratitude and the love that the hugeness that you were in that moment is in that jam. Yeah. And contained, and oh boy, wouldn't I like a bite of that right now.
Yeah. I should send you a jar.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, it's always like this. I always feel like I could talk for hours, but we've kind of set the podcast to be around half an hour. So I would just like to ask you, if people are interested in finding out more about you and more about your work, where can they find you?
Oh, good idea. So people could email me. My email is awaters@pacific.net. That's AWATERS at Pacific, like the ocean, .net. That would be probably one of the easiest things. I'm on Facebook. I'm wondering, I think my name is Ann Bridget Waters on Facebook, and I'm in a number of goddess groups and things around on Facebook could be found. And I love discussions and would be very, very interested in talking to anyone who wants to know more about sacred activism or about, you know, the last, let's say, 50 to 60 years of my life and how I feel. Boy, all the things, the challenges, the lessons, the things, the regrets, all that still, it's all part of the grist for the mill.
Yeah, I love that, grist for the mill. I love that.
So thank you for interviewing me, Ellen. It's wonderful to meet you. You're a beautiful person, and I want all these interviews to go out into the world and keep the conference going all year long.
Yes, me too. Thank you very much, Anne, and I hope to see you again.
Blessed be.
Blessed be. Thank you so much for listening. To find out everything you need to know about the conference, please visit goddessconference.com. And to find out more about me, your host, you can find me at elinhale.com. That's elinhejll.com. And also at the Stockholm Goddess Temple on social media. See you next time.